Talkback with Gary Nall, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Oh, a happy day.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Nall Show. And now, your host, Gary Nall.
Today, I'm going to go in depth on the subject of cortisol. Recently, I did a discussion on how stress changes our biochemistry. And as a result, when our cortisol levels are elevated, we're at more risk of having a heart attack or stroke. A special review in depth on cortisol and what we can do in a positive way to lower it. I'll be sharing information from Jen Whitcomb of Life Extension. And then I'm asked all the time, how do we detoxify? Because every day someone wakes up and decides maybe today's the right day to change their lives for the better. Okay, now you have a cumulative toxic load. How do you get those pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, heavy metals out of your body? I'll share that with you and give you some of the insights of what I do when I'm counseling people, plus information from Philip D'Amico and Carrie Monserrate on their work as well. But this hour is for you to call in and share your comments, thoughts, points of view, and questions. Please feel free to do so. I'll be taking questions throughout the program at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And at the last part of our program, Dr. Martin Feldman is going to share some insight on that gut feeling. What exactly does that mean, a gut feeling? Well, he's going to share some very interesting research about what goes on in your gut that can cause those feelings. So let us begin our journey. There's an interesting article that I just read in a major scientific journal by Bruce Ames and Joyce McCann. And they're stating that even very modest deficiencies of any vitamin or mineral can increase the risk and incidence of age-related disease. Now, this whole concept is based upon the body evolved to allocate frequently scarce micronutrients to short-term survival or reproductive functioning rather than those that are protective of long-term health. This results in damage to the tissue during nutrient-deficient states. Now, why is this important? Several reasons. First, because right now, the FDA is putting its full efforts to ban all vitamins in America, all of them, 100%. You wouldn't be able to buy anything, unless, of course, it's made by a pharmaceutical company and has a patent. And that's really the reason they're doing it. I will be suing the FDA this coming week, and we have hired the best attorney in the United States on behalf of the American people who believe they should have a freedom of taking their vitamins, Jonathan Emord. He's won 7 out of 7 cases against the FDA. At the very least, we will slow this whole process down. It was actually supposed to take effect in just 4 weeks. That won't happen. And then we'll educate the public, and hopefully they'll put pressure on Congress, and we'll expose the FDA and its illegalities in the process. But here's the deeper issue. The American medical community and the FDA and virtually all major scientific organizations in the United States believe that we do not need supplements. Yes, there are certain vitamins we need and minerals, but the assumption is we can get this from the American diet. Now, being a registered dietitian and realizing how misinformed most dietitians are, how lacking in quality information they are. I'll give you this perspective. For decades, those who were eating a lot of raw foods, fruits and vegetables in their diet or having juices were shown to be healthier. But they were considered health nuts. These were people that wanted quality fiber, lots of nuts, chew their food properly, exercise, went for walks. And then they coined this phrase, the little old lady in tennis shoes. Remember that? That was for women who weren't supposed to be exercising because they were past the age of exercising, which was somewhere, I guess, in your 30s. And it was a very sexist, misogynist notion that any woman in the United States that cared about her health and really did something good for herself was considered unscientific, delusional, and stupid by the entire medical society. Virtually the entire scientific society was sexist, stupid, vile against humanity because millions and millions of people died out of their ignorance. Because instead of encouraging people to take the right things, do the right things, they encouraged them to smoke. In fact, there were articles in the Journal of the American Medical Association. One article in particular sticks out. 47,000 doctors recommend you smoke Lucky Strikes because it calms your nerves and good for your throat. Soothes your throat, it says. And then they hired, at that time, an actor, Ronald Reagan, to convince you that you should smoke. So they wouldn't want you taking fiber. They wouldn't want you juicing. Certainly not exercising. And not eating all those fruits and vegetables. Eat your steak. Have your dairy, your white bread, TV dinners. So virtually everything that you could do wrong, American medicine did it wrong. It got nothing right. And as a result, we suffered from an epidemic of preventable diseases as we have today. Now, what we have learned along the way from hundreds of thousands of studies is that we do need those vitamins and minerals. We do have to change our diet. We have to stop eating those trans fats and the very foods they've been encouraging us. So if you did just the opposite of everything that the government scientists and regular doctor tells you to do, you're going to live a longer and healthier life. So when they say moderation in all things, you can answer them if they're willing to even listen to you. And most, we all know most doctors are so arrogant, so conceited, so stuck on themselves, coming through massively disproportionate ego, that they're going to say, okay, tell me something that I don't know. And you're going to say, well, doctor, do you mean that I can have something as poisonous as long as I have it in moderate amounts? So could I have a fish that has a lot of mercury? Or can I have canned tuna that has a lot of lead from the can? Can I have sugar? Now, the average American's consuming about 165 pounds of sugar a year, so a moderate amount would be half that. So is it all right if I have 85 pounds of sugar? Now, I'm a diabetic, or I'm a kid, or I'm a senior citizen on dialysis, but you haven't told me not to do any of this, so moderation, I guess I can do this. Now, the average American's drinking 4 cups of coffee a day, so could I have 2? Moderate amount. My kids were drinking 5 colas. If they have 2.5, that's moderate with that high fructose corn syrup and the caffeine. That's about 300 milligrams caffeine. That's moderate. And pesticides and fungicides, you haven't told me at all that those are bad. Fluoride in the water or parasites in the water, Giardia in the water, so I imagine I could have some moderate parasites. You didn't tell me anything about hygiene, so I guess that I don't have to wash my hands after I'm in a subway and holding the same handle that every, you know, one of the 30,000 people in that car are handling today, and all the parasites, viruses, and bacteria on their hand clearly won't hurt me, or you would have told me, wash your hands. So moderate amounts of viruses, bacteria, and parasites from exposure. Now, if I'm in a crowded place and people are coughing and sneezing, and I don't have to put my hand up and protect myself because, let's say, that would require a lot. So moderately, I'll just do it a few times. I don't have to wash all the time, do I? How about brushing my teeth? Moderate? Moderate brushing my teeth. once, twice a week? Is that enough? And then you start realizing the absurdity of it. Now, wouldn't one glass of alcohol a day be moderate? So I'm going to have scotch or bourbon, and it'll be about 8 ounces and six instead of 16. So I'm taking a half of what a glass would be at 90% alcohol, but I'm taking one a day. Now, that's going to kill about 3 million liver cells, kidney cells, heart cells, and brain cells. But compared to 60 to 100 trillion, that's a very moderate amount of killed cells. And I'm going to be in the, where everyone else at Jones Beach is out in the sun for 3 hours. I'm going to be out there for an hour and a half getting direct sun exposure. Moderate. And then you start to realize, gee whiz, moderate. A moderate amount of a toxin, does it make it any less toxic or just take longer to accumulate? And is there just one toxin coming into my body? And you start seeing the absurdity of what medicine and healthcare does not teach us. So when it comes to nutrients, a small amount of zinc deficiency causes major havoc with your immune system. A small amount of deficiency of vitamin D3 can lead you to have more inflammation in your brain, more inflammation in your joints, more inflammation in your lungs, and your heart and joints are extremely vulnerable to deficiency of vitamin D3. A moderate deficiency of vitamin C means you're more susceptible to colds and flu and cancer cells actually not being killed in your body. So in effect, you're taking half the police off the force when it comes to catching cancer cells. Doesn't make a lot of sense, but I'm showing you that just small deficiencies in vitamins are bad. I would rather err by giving you more of the nutrients, the micronutrients that you need, potassium, for example, so that your body is never deficient. Now, when you're stressed, you're going to be deficient. When you're not sleeping right, deficient. When you're eating bad foods that are fried and deep-fried or heavily cooked, high temperature, bad foods end up causing inflammation. So this simple study here shows that when you are just, quote, modestly deficient in any vitamin or mineral, you're going to increase age-related diseases. Heart disease, cancer, diabetes, dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's. How about that? You've also heard me mention that you cannot possibly be overweight and be healthy, because there's so many negative biological factors occurring when you're overweight. This is the latest on this. And very important to understand what this says. This was done at the Cleveland Clinic. It says, obesity increases liver disease. Why? Well, it's relatively simple. Because you're putting too many toxins into the liver to be detoxified, and the body can't do it. It's just too much, overwhelms it. Now, in a separate article in Immunology Letters, researchers at Oregon State University, Linus Pauling Institute, show that green tea suppresses autoimmune disease, an imbalance in the immune system that results in the body attacking itself. How much? I would suggest 800 milligrams of green tea a day. Now, in the green tea, you have what is called EGCG, and this is an epigallocatechin gallate, and these are polyphenols that are very healing, and they also help regulate T cells, which help dampen the immune system, and so that helps keep your DNA younger longer. So make sure you're getting your green tea each day. New information on resveratrol. Now, that's what you get when you drink red wine, grape juice, which I believe is the best source, eating grapes, which are also terrific, or taking a supplement of resveratrol. I'm suggesting 200 milligrams. Here's what this says. Resveratrol shows promise as an anti-aging compound. Now, this was published in Molecular Nutrition and Food Research. And it concludes that resveratrol, which has recently gained a lot of popularity as an anti-aging and disease-preventing compound, does indeed possess the ability to retard the development of some of the conditions associated with aging. And they took a look at 4,000 studies. That's 4,000 separate studies published on the subject of resveratrol. And they found that two-thirds of those who use multiple supplements, including resveratrol, in the regimen have far fewer diseases. That's good news. So make sure you're getting your resveratrol. And also, if you're not getting enough sleep, according to the journals, peer-reviewed journal Sleep, it can end up affecting cognition by as much as 7 years. Most people start losing cognition in their mid-40s. That means you could be losing it in your late 30s. Also, olive oil is used to lower the risk of stroke. This is from the peer-reviewed journal Neurology. And here's what it says. I'll quote this. Cecilia Samari, PhD and Associates, analyzed the data from 7,600 participants in the three-city study. Olive oil consumption frequency was ascertained from dietary intake documents that in this 1 year period substantially reduces the impact of stroke by 41%. In the secondary subjects with the highest level of oleic acid had a 73% reduction in stroke compared to those with levels that were the lowest. So if you want to really reduce your risk of stroke, take olive oil. I'm going to suggest 3 tablespoons a day. I'm Gary Knoll, going to come back in a moment and give you some insights on lowering that really bad cortisol level, and then I'll begin to take your calls. I'll open our call line again at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'm broadcasting live and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. We've had a wonderful week of filming, filmed all day yesterday, filmed 18 people for a documentary yesterday, and today. So, going to put all this into a new feature film. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Hey, what's up, man?
Brother, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Party, man.
Hey, I can dig it.
Stop.
There's far too many of you dying. You know we can find a way to bring some loving here today. Hey. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. See, war is not the answer, for only love can. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Let's say hello to Jim from New York. Hi, Jim. Jim, you're
Hi, Gary.
On?
My question is, I've had blueberries and black raspberries growing for about 2 years. The bushes are growing, but there's no fruit. Recently, I bought new ones from an organic farmer, and the growing instructions that he gave me was to use Osmocote. I've never heard of it, so I looked it up on the Internet, and there seems to be a little bit of a controversy whether or not you could use that in an organic garden.
I would, not use that.
Okay. Do you have a different replacement for that?
Yeah, sure. I grow. I'm going to just ask my engineer to check my audio. I'm hearing a echoey feedback. Thank you. I just planted, maybe 6 months ago, I planted 100 I planted 100 blueberry bushes. And how I do it is this. Strawberry or raspberry, black raspberry, and blueberry. After you plant it, put a lot of hay around the base, about a half a bale of hay, for two reasons. One, it keeps the soil from drying out, especially if the sun hits that. The sun hitting the soil will overheat the tiny little villi, which are the hair-like extensions onto the root system that can cause that then to die and won't get as much nutrient into the plant base. Secondly, I make what is called a well. So you dig an indentation, you put your plant in, and then you make a rim around it and use a drip irrigation so that twice a day, water comes on, percolates out at a small level for about 10 minutes. That gives an even soaking of the root system without saturation, over-soaking. Then I put a fish emulsion with seaweed every single week, every seventh day. I put a whole, I would say about what would be about a pint of mixed with water, of course, diluted about 21, around the plants. Now, I also do that for all the other trees, and as a result, I have some of the finest specimen trees in the United States. In fact, I believe some are up on my website now. It's been a while since I've been to my home. I've been traveling so much. But the last time I was there, I took some photos of specimen trees. And these are trees that they're the amongst the best of their kind in the United States. And normally where it would take 20 to 25 years to get a certain width at the trunk, I'm getting it in about 15 years because the fertilization is every week. The normal course of fertilization of most trees and shrubs is three times a year with a pellet fertilizer. Instead, I believe in doing a spray fertilizer, one that you spray into the trees, into the shrubs, and onto the top of the fruit trees and let it come down, because the whole tree then begins to absorb that, making sure it's purely organic and that there's no toxins whatsoever. And that's how I would go about doing it. So it's the frequency and the quality that you use, but I wouldn't use the one you mentioned. Thank you for your call. Let's say hello to James from Winnipeg. Hi, James, and thank you for calling from Canada.
Yeah, how are you?
Good.
Good. I have two questions. The first one is health-related. 5 years ago, I was chelating out heavy metals with DMSA or DMPS, and I was using both, but I had some kind of allergic reaction, and my mouth now doesn't produce the saliva that it should. It does when I eat, but even now as I'm talking, it starts to wear away and gets very thin. It gets very uncomfortable. I have tried all kinds of things and have had no help. I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts on that. And the second one is I just finished reading a book called Let the Trumpet Sound on Martin Luther King. And about a year and a half ago, on the day we celebrate his birthday, you read a commentary. I think it was Chris Hedges' commentary. And I think one of the comments you made was those who were responsible for his death or charged with death were in no way responsible for killing him. I'd just like to know what you meant by that.
I think you misheard what was stated. It was not those who were responsible for his death were those people who were, and that was a larger metaphor for those people who did not consider themselves racist, but never once took it upon themselves to address the racism in America. And it is my contention, and I'm responsible for my own thoughts, that those who see a crime and say nothing and do nothing, for whatever their motivation, fear or indifference, or because maybe they really believe that someone had it coming, those people never end up apologizing. But on the other end of it, Martin Luther King would not hold those people accountable unless they could first hold themselves accountable. It's like accusing someone of a crime who never acknowledges they've committed a crime. Then what is there? Where is their transition? Where will they learn how the lessons of their crime? They won't. So they'll just stay incarcerated. They come out of a prison and they're just as bad as when they went in. Or someone will lie and get caught in a lie but not acknowledge they lied. The whole idea was to acknowledge, and I said this at the time, I said, it is easier to deal with a known racist who acknowledges their racism than someone who is also a racist but refuse to acknowledge they are because they're not out there as a part of a lynch mob. But they've never stopped a lynch mob. They've never condemned a lynch mob. They've never taken a forthright position when there is a social injustice. They've stayed quiet. And by that, the idea was Martin Luther King would have been the first person, I believe, who would have allowed the persons who committed the crimes of not supporting the civil rights movement to understand that they are not never going to have that peace and harmony among races as long as they don't acknowledge who they really are. And that's as true of blacks to whites as whites to black or any other race. And I believe we have a lot more quiet racism than what we've ever acknowledged in our society. I also believe we also have gender disparity, and we have a lot of problems acknowledging the dark side of our nature. And that's what that meant. And speaking on behalf of Chris Hedges, when it was his commentary that I was actually sharing with you at that time. Now, what is your health question?
The mouth in my the saliva in my mouth, it doesn't produce on an ongoing basis as I talk. It wears away. It gets very very thin. It gets very uncomfortable.
Who did your chelation that would have given you two different chelations?
It was a Center for Natural Medicine here in Winnipeg.
Okay. All right. Did you bring this to their attention?
I did.
And what did they say?
They said, strange, and then we did try some L-glutamine, but it didn't have any effect.
I wouldn't have imagined glutamine would have. First, you never do two different types of chelation.
But they weren't at the same time. He was using one for a while, and then we used a different one for a while. I can't remember which one.
I still wouldn't do that, because understand what chelation is doing. Chelation is binding with all metals, not just heavy metals. That's why you have to have your urine measured on a regular basis, on a daily basis, when you're having chelation, to see what is the nature of, the amount of, and the type of heavy metals and minerals that have been taken out of the body so the good minerals can be put back in.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's any imbalance in the advice that they gave you, that imbalance of taking too many of the minerals out that you need was where the problem existed. So what would I do at this point? I would start by understanding that you have to stimulate your lymphatic system. And by cleansing the lymphatic system and then re-regulating this whole production of saliva, and I would do a complete detoxification. And I mean a serious detox, not a couple-day detox. This is probably going to be about a 90-day detox where you are rebalancing your hormones, because hormones directly impact saliva. And, for example, when we have an elevation of cortisol, cortisol is our flight or fight hormone. When we need our blood sugar lowered, we have two hormones that are in play. Glucagon, that keeps the blood sugar from going down too low, and insulin, which that helps it from going too high, bring it down. You have adrenaline, which helps maintain your energy levels. All of these, plus your thyroid gland, all of these are intimately related to stress, both emotional stress and physical stress, viral stress, bacterial stress, environmental stress. So when you come to rebalancing your hormones and rebalancing your glands, because it's the gland that actually makes the saliva and creates a certain pH in the saliva and provides digestive enzymes such as ptyalin and amylase in that same saliva, you can't do it by isolating one gland or one imbalance. It's going to be a system-wide rebalancing that's required. I suggest that you have a holistic endocrinologist or an internist help you do that. I don't know any up there, but if you contact Jason in our office, he has a list of holistic physicians around North America, and we have about, 30 or 40,000. And we will do the best we can of finding you someone in Canada near where you live. All right? All the best to you. I'm Gary Null, taking your calls here. Let's say hello to Camille. Hi, Camille, from Long Island.
Gary, good to talk to you again and to say thank you. I followed your protocol. I read Food Mood Connection, and I was on an antidepressant for anxiety and depression. I'm off it about a month now. I feel great following your protocol. And I just want to say thank you so much. And my husband and I, we listen to you every day now. And we've become more progressive-minded. And we are so grateful for you. I did see my doctor because I've been having a bad cough, and it's allergies. And, of course, he prescribed something, an inhaler with a steroid. And I told him I did not want to take anything with steroids. So I was wondering, in fact, I told him I was off my antidepressant, and he told me I should go back on a little bit so I don't drive my family crazy, so I have fired him as my doctor. But would you recommend an inhaler or something without a steroid that I can take for this cough?
All right. It's not an inhaler that I would look at. I would look at you either have a viral or bacterial or some form of airborne allergen that could be causing the reflex that's causing the coughing. So first and foremost, you should see what exactly is causing the coughing. Once you identify the cause, then it's relatively easy to give some protocol that could help. So start with getting an actual sample. They can take a saliva sample and they can take a blood sample, and then you could have it tested. It's inexpensive. Then contact me by going to askgary@garynoll.com, and then I'll give you a protocol. I don't want to give you a protocol till we know exactly what's causing it, because it has to be very specific. All right? All the best to you, Camille. Let's say hello to Monica from Los Angeles. Hi, Monica.
Hi, Gary. I'm calling about my sister. She had a... she had a blood test, and they found protein in the urine, and I think it was like rated a 3. Now, is that high, or do you know what that means?
Depends upon the type of protein. There are multiple proteins you can find in the urine. What I suggest you do is this. If you want me to analyze your sister's blood chemistry, send it over in its entirety, because there's going to be at least 40 to 50 different readings. And I have to read each one in proportion to the other. Otherwise, you know, if you say, oh, I have albumin, or if I have another type of fractionalized protein, I have to know what fraction it is. I have to know if it's a marker. So I have to see the whole blood chemistry in order to be able to give you any insight. All
okay,
right?
And I send it to Gary Noll?
No, ask Gary.
Okay.
At GaryNoll.com.
And also, Gary, you know, I love cayenne pepper. I love hot things. And is it dangerous at all to have that frequently?
It depends upon at what heat level you're eating it. Are you eating it at 10,000? That's very mild. But 150,000 would be extremely hot. If you ate any of that, you wouldn't be able to eat anything else for the next 2 days. So you have to know what is the heat units. Up to about 50,000 is what you're going to find in most of the cayennes on the market. A Jamaican cayenne is hotter, and look for the heat units. And it's the unit of heat that will tell you whether or not you should be having it and for what condition, versus just enjoying the taste of it, in which case you're almost always going to get a mild one, generally under 10 to 15,000, just enough to give you a little sensation of the heat, but not enough to burn. Okay? All the best, Monica. And Marie from Great Neck. Hi, Marie.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you.
I think I dehydrated. And what would you suggest, other than drinking water, that I should do? And can it be reversed?
Of course it can be reversed. There's two mechanisms in the brain that help us. When we're younger, they work very well. The older we get, the less likely they are to be that accurate. And we can end up suffering from either polydipsia or hydrodipsia, where we have too much water but don't know it, or have too little water and don't know it. And one of the dangers of being a senior citizen today, if you're the average senior citizen, is that you're not getting the actual desire for water. So you're not knowing when you should be thirsty. And that's because there's a biological deficiency. The brain isn't saying, you need water, drink. So I would do the following, just to do it right. Get yourself a simple, inexpensive impedance test taken. Now, I just had mine taken yesterday. I was filming in our studio at 92nd Street, and while I was there waiting for people to film, and by the way, I'm going to put some of these people up this week on GaryNoll.com, ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, and on our Facebook. I wanted to show people who are just beginning their journey of health and healing what is possible. If I say something is possible, well, that's one level of credibility, but there's nothing as credible as a person who is telling their own story, uncoached, unrehearsed. They come in, they sit behind the camera, and they say, hi, my name is such and such, and I ask them to give their full names, and then I say, tell us your story. What did you have prior to starting your healthy protocols? They tell us, and what happened? And then they tell us. And you'll see there's no editing. It's one continuous conversation. Now, most of them are anywhere between a minute and a half, and one was about 5 minutes long. One example yesterday, a nurse practitioner, which is the same as a physician, was taking care of her 79-year-old father, as well as her mother. And her mother came also because her mother was able to go from having an extremely serious, non-reversible, non-medically treatable medical condition to where in less than 3 months she has back a quality of life and is able to breathe again and is feeling terrific. Then it was the daughter's opportunity, I'm going to guess the daughter's in her 40s, to talk about her father. Her father was treated in a hospital, and the side effect of the treatment was, because of lack of sanitation and changing some dressings, he developed an ulcer. Now here's the reality. 75,000 to 100,000 Americans die each year from ulcers of the leg and the back. These are external ulcers. And then they die of the septic quality of the ulcer. Generally, these ulcers can be 1 or 2 inches deep. They go right into the muscle, then that bacteria, and goes into the bloodstream, and the person dies. They're very expensive to treat. It's about $40,000 to treat a single ulcer. And by the way, these are 100% preventable. There's no reason for anyone to ever develop a physical ulcer as long as the body's being turned, as long as the nurses are attentive, as long as you're massaging the body. And I'm of the belief that what they should have is they should have 100% organic linen with magnetic mattress pads on the bed and also vibrators underneath the mattress so that the person's body is being physically manipulated, the musculature is being manipulated, so you're bringing blood flow and muscle reaction, because any type of stimulation at all to the musculature, the nerves go from up to the brain back and a signal says react. And hence there's a slight movement. Well, that movement is just enough to get microcirculation in and prevent that person from just laying there still, where a poor circulation and lack of hygiene causes this to happen. Also, I believe that they wiped every person's bedding down each day with some hydrogen peroxide, you would be preventing this also. In any case, she said that he had an ulcer that was so deep. And being a nurse herself, as well as a nurse practitioner, and working on wards for a long time, she said, you rarely see this at this age ever getting better. And when a few times it does get better and you send the person back to either a nursing home or where they came from, they almost always return. The second time they return, they die because it reoccurs. In this case, she took one of my protocols and applied it, and building the immune system on the inside and using specific therapies on the outside. And she's been taking pictures. And when she went back to the person that actually gives her the prescriptions for the particular gauze that she needs and the antibiotic treatment gauze, he said he's never seen a case heal this fast ever. in just 2 weeks, there was all this new tissue. And there was E. coli. They actually did a cell culture, determined there was E. coli in there. And that's been killed off. So this is a man who is almost recovered. In another few weeks, he'll be fully recovered. The ulcer will be 100% healed, and his immune system will be stronger because of this. And it's nice to hear these kind of stories. Also, the woman who completely reversed her chronic fatigue syndrome. The man who reverses multiple sclerosis 100%. He went from not being able to walk, dizzy, falling over, lack also of saliva production in the mouth, having the inability to focus, and he studied everything on multiple sclerosis and saw there was no happy outcome, that the only thing the medications will do is, well, it would be like marijuana for a cancer patient. It will take away some of the pain, but it will not change the outcome of the disease. So the same thing with multiple sclerosis. There is no happy outcome. You just keep losing more and more muscle until finally they tell you, prepare, and they prepare you. He said they prepare you that, you know, it's going to get worse, and no two people go downhill at the same pace, but you're going to have railings, a ramp, a wheelchair, and finally, you know, you're laying on a bed, you can't move, and then your heart gives out because it's also a muscle. And this is the plight of people with MS. And yet, after all that, and he began a holistic protocol I gave him, today he's totally cured. And he talked about the fact that the doctor, the immunologist, when doing this whole series of studies, because the doctor couldn't believe what was happening, so he kept doing more and more studies, and finally said, you know, I don't know what happened, but he didn't want to know what happened. When he asked, do you want to know the protocol? No, no, no. And this fear of knowing, as Fritz Perl said, the father of Gestalt psychology, is a fear of doing. So if we don't know the truth, then we don't have to act on it. And that's intentional ignorance. In any case, I filmed a lot of interesting people, a person who overcame hepatitis C, a person who overcame hepatitis B, a person who overcame herpes, 1 and 2 and 6. And so they were there to tell their stories. I think 18 people just yesterday. All told now, I have 1,600, that's 1,600 people I filmed, who overcome the conditions, including 12 who are completely free of all HIV and AIDS-defining illnesses, who were in stage near death. And I'm putting all these up, starting this week, putting 20 at a time up, and every week a new 20 goes up, until I get probably 2,000 up. So then when people say, well, there's no truth to healing, all this is all nonsense, you'll be able to say, well, okay, that's your view, but why don't you just look? Now you tell me these 2,000 people are all lying. Their pictures before and after, their medical reports before and after. The woman who is a brilliant intellect who was there who had reversed her Alzheimer's. And she told what it was like before she started the protocol. And she was being treated both at NYU and Columbia without any success whatsoever. In fact, Columbia's therapy made her much worse. She couldn't eat. She didn't bathe or brush her teeth for months. She went from her bed to her couch. She couldn't go outside. Once a day, a friend would send a Chinese meal by delivery person. She had trouble eating. She couldn't have conversations. She couldn't read. She couldn't watch television. She could do nothing. She was waiting, quote, to die. And today, she is living a vibrant, dynamic life. It's kind of fun to hear these things. MS, cured, herpes, AIDS. And so if you are an average person and you've been told these cannot be, then you have to reject it. If you're a physician, you must reject it. If you're a journalist, don't even think about investigating it because you must find a way to discredit it. You cannot possibly accept it because it's not official. And you're only allowed, as a journalist and indoctrinated like a zombie, you're only allowed to report on official treatments. So if a drug that was terribly toxic was the new promising cure for any of this, you would herald it and how brave and heroic the scientists were, but then you wouldn't come back in 2 years to see that, well, you know, like all the other drugs that were supposed to be miracle cures are all on the junk heap pile of dashed promises. But something that works and is proven over and over again, no, don't go near it. And then because it's not official. So anything in life that's not official must be rejected, no matter what it is. 85% of all discussions that you have, 85%, whatever you're saying must be rejected if it's not in perfect alignment with the prevailing Orthodox views. Even today, while I was sitting at my desk and writing, I'm writing commentaries for tomorrow night. I'm going to have a very powerful commentary tomorrow. You will not want to miss tomorrow's 7 p.m. Progressive Radio commentary, because I'm going to give you a history lesson on the truth of American intervention over the last 100 years. But I had the television on, and I like to flick to see how they're covering issues. And what was interesting is here's Fox, and they're talking about Michelle Bachmann winning the straw poll, and all he would talk about was Michelle and Mitt Romney and the other candidates. Not once did he mention Ron Paul. Not once. And then finally, the other guy in the studio said, well, shouldn't we mention Ron Paul? Okay. But then he did it in this real smart alecky, wise-ass way of, all right, well, if we got to mention that loon, okay. As if, well, he doesn't have a chance in hell, and he's just some screwball with some devoted followers. Let's break this down. I believe we should look at things by examining each piece and then seeing what we can make of this. Okay? He was only second by a few votes out of thousands, just a few. What would happen if Ron Paul were elected office? Now, let's just say we don't get a progressive in there. We won't. So we have to look, are there any Democrats or Republicans who align themselves with the average American's needs that would make it a better country for the rest of us? Small business people, homeowners, people whose mortgages are underwater, college with student loans. The people want an end to the wars and the military intervention. The people want to honor the Constitution and become the republic we were meant to be. The people want us to be responsible for the money we spend and not simply have the left saying we can spend any amount of money as long as we're hiring someone, that's all that matters, and the right saying, you know, drown it in a bathtub, both of which are wrong. So let me just examine this. On the one hand, if I had to look at all the Democrats likely to run and all the Republicans who are running, who would get us out of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and save American lives and the lives of people in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and people in Iraq? Ron Paul. No one else. No one else. So he's anti-war. Who would protect our rights of freedom of choice in medical care, including not to vaccinate if we choose to? Well, let me see. Rick Perry, the governor of Texas, is pro-mandatory vaccine, even when he was sent information by Alec Jones, who has more integrity and has been more right than wrong on all these major issues. Rick Perry be pro-vaccine, Michelle Bachmann pro-vaccine, Ron Paul, the only one of Democrat and Republicans, so you get freedom of choice. Who is the one who believes the FDA is corrupt and should be completely reconstituted? Ron Paul. Which one believes that we should eliminate the Federal Reserve, the most corrupt organization in American history, the one that just gave $16.1 trillion to banks, including between Bank of America and J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs and Citibank gave $6 trillion to them? Oh, and did we forget the man who runs Citibank got a $41 million bonus this year? So all their bad debts are taken by the Fed, meaning the taxpayer, cleaned, and they get brand new money at 0.2% interest, which is zero interest. Oh, and they have these credit card companies as part of their banks, and they have debit cards, and they can charge you anywhere from 28% to 2,000% if you're late with a debit card. But they don't save anyone's home for foreclosure, and they did most of those loans illegally. But let's not prosecute them. Who would prosecute them? Ron Paul. Who would close down the Federal Reserve? Ron Paul. Who would close down the IRS? Ron Paul. Who would have one tax that we all should pay? Something I have advocated a long time ago. I believe that we could actually lower taxes. Yes, you heard me right. How could we possibly lower taxes? Isn't that irresponsible? Not at all. If you simply made everyone, every corporation in America, every small business person, pay one flat income tax, without any deductions allowed. and the same thing at a personal level. You would suddenly increase the federal revenue by over $700 billion a year, minimum. And what if you stopped all those subsidies to the special interest groups? That would save $1.5 trillion. And what if you took that military-industrial complex from $1.4 trillion down to $200 billion, all that we actually need to be safe and have a military defense? Well, now with you can actually lower taxes, reduce the size of ineffective government to make it effective, and have the laws in place that protect us and the environment, but are not there to be meaningless bureaucracies. It's what we have now. So the only person at all who will run for office as a Democrat or Republican who will do anything that's actually good for us as individuals is Ron Paul. And he's the one person they refuse to acknowledge. Oh, and you know all those young kind of stupid people that support him? Yeah, those are young people. So what we're saying is if you're a young, idealistic American who realizes that the Democrats and Republicans are both corrupt, that they're completely self-absorbed, and the Congress is corrupt, and we have maybe a handful, like Bernie Sanders, who's an independent, by the way, he's neither Democrat or Republican, and he keeps being called a Democrat. Unfortunately, he's not. Or fortunately, he is not a Democrat. And then we have Dennis Kucinich, a person I feel would be very qualified, but the most qualified person in America to be president would be Ralph Nader, with the person to be the best vice president, Ron Paul. So, but we don't even have that discussion. We're not allowed to have that discussion because it's not official. So you see, you're never going to get the truth from any governmental agency or any corporation or the media as long as what you're asking must first be filtered through the eyes and mind of officialdom, both Democrat officialdom and Republican officialdom. That's too bad. But I thank you for your call very much. Let's say hello to Dr. Martin Feldman, who's on our line now. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Gary. Very interesting new research out there. We have the popular phrase, it's a gut feeling. That means that you feel something from your brain, but you sort of think it's in your gut at some level. Now there's proof. Yes, there is proof. The microbes, the friendly bacteria in the gut, actually secrete neurochemicals that travel through the bloodstream into the brain. So this is a major issue in terms of health of both the gut and the brain. And we know for many, many years now that the 70% of the immune system is in the small intestine. The small intestine has lymphoid tissue, which protects us as an immune protective barrier. But now we now also have to keep our friendly bacteria in line to not affect the brain, let's say, badly. First, there are certain things we have to omit. First of all, what has to be reduced. We were going to talk before about cortisol. Maybe it'll be in the next show. Cortisol, high levels, and stress in general affects the gut a great deal. So you must reduce your cortisol, you must reduce your stress to keep your gut-friendly bacteria in a proper balance. Next, food allergy. Food allergies are hard to test because most of the laboratories that test, they do the best they can, but it's very hard to test the foods. One of the best, simplest ways is elimination. For 8 days, you remove the food, and you have another few days, say 8 to 12 days, you can put the food back in a mono meal, see if you react badly to the food. Food allergy is critical for the gut. You've got to reduce all toxic chemicals. You've got to be more toward organic. You have to reduce sugar. You have to reduce antibiotics. You have to especially reduce stomach acid therapy, such as Tagamet. These all have to go eventually. They reduce the stomach acid in the stomach, but it affects the gut indirectly because the pH of the whole system gets screwed up. Tagamet, Zantac, Prevacid, Prilosec, Protonix, Nexium. All those guys cause havoc. Now, what else do we have to do in terms of this gut? Well, we also have to reduce potential pathogenic bacteria in the gut, which are the unfriendlies. They're the bad guys. The friendlies push them aside. We have certain specific non-drug approaches to reduce the pathogenic bacteria in the gut, such as oil of oregano, olive leaf extract, propolis, colloidal silver, argon grapefruit, bismuth. These are non-drugs, very, very helpful to reduce the bad bacteria in the gut. So now, what do we do now to put things in? We know what to avoid. What do we do to put stuff back in? First off would be friendly bacteria directly, and there are two major types. There are many, many types. The two major ones are the Lactobacillus acidophilus and the Bifidobacterium bifidum. The Lactobacillus is more for the small intestine. The Bifidus is more for the colon. Very, very helpful, very, very critical. We have it as non-dairy and dairy sources. Many people do well with the non-dairy. Some people cannot handle the non-dairy. They have to have the dairy for true effect. Also, a critical issue would be to take in more fiber. Then there are certain specific nutrients. I'll just list a few of them. Glutamine, inulin, N-acetyl-D-glucosamine. Those are some of the major, major ones to get in there to help out with the friendly bacteria. So friendly bacteria now have a much more respect, and I hope this goes toward traditional medicine. We have to keep our gut healthy for our brain.
Dr. Martin Feldman, thank you very much. Dr. Feldman's office at 212-744-4413. He is the holistic physician, neurologist, professor of neurology at Mount Sinai. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen in. I appreciate it. Look forward to sharing more. Now let's say hello to Mike Rupert, who's standing by to start his show in about 15 seconds. Hi, Mike.
Hiya, Gary. How you doing?
Good. What are you going to talk about tonight?
We have an amazingly special show tonight. I'll give a little bit of news, but we have two incredible guests. We have Peter Charles Downey, director and producer of a new movie called Anima Mundi, and David Holmgren, the co-founder of Permaculture, who was a subject in the movie, as was I. I was interviewed a little bit. But it's a very special time to be talking about not only permaculture, but about Gaian spirituality. And this movie is the coming out party for it.
Good. I look forward to it. Thank you very much. Michael Rupert, following us in 60 seconds. Thank you all for listening.